Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy. Border Influx Impacts Local Communities by Ruth Campbell. Border security, election integrity, and energy independence were among the topics U.S. Representative August Pfluger spoke about during a town hall Friday at the Mulberry Cafe in Midland. About 75 people came out to coffee with your congressman to hear the Republican lawmaker, including several elected officials from Ector and Midland counties. You have some phenomenal leadership in Odessa and Midland. They are doing great things to lead this community, which is one of the reasons that I have hope for where we are as a country, Pfluger said. In July, he said more than 200,000 illegal immigrants came into the U.S. He expressed concern that the immigrants also are bringing in COVID. Our Constitution lays out it very succinctly, and the rule of law must be enforced. It must be followed. Sheriff David Kreiner is in the room right now, and I know good and well that the impact right here in Midland County, next door in Ector County, over in Andrews County, the impact is this. There are more drugs, including fentanyl. There is human trafficking and is going on, and we're seeing a rise in crime right here. That is happening because folks are being allowed to basically walk right in, Pfluger said. He added that he has visited the border multiple times. He visited La Jolla and talked to a local police officer who has basically been deputized into a program that allows him to work with federal agencies and work side by side with a border patrol. Pfluger said the officer told him there were about 250 to 300 illegal immigrants walking down this road, and that was during a 12-hour shift. Pfluger said the officer told them they pulled a 6-year-old boy out of the brush left there by the cartels. The officer told him the cartels used children and families as a diversion to get fentanyl, traffickers, and dangerous people into the country. This is unacceptable. It's unacceptable to see the rise in crime, the rise of drugs, the rise in illicit illegal activity, the safe houses that have been found right here in Midland, Pfluger said. Because of the border crisis, Pfluger said Texas Department of Public Safety troopers have been pulled in to help, which means less people that the sheriff can call for backup here. That's the impact because President Biden has not done what he needs to do to provide the resources and the manpower and the technology to keep our borders safe, Pfluger said. The influx from the border in Central America is caused by bad policies and undoing what President Trump did, working with Mexico, Honduras, and El Salvador to help stem the flow by having them remain in a third country. Pfluger asked for help on this, and he has an ally in Representative Henry Cuellar, Democrat, Laredo. Congressman Cuellar is one of the only Democrats who has stood up to Nancy Pelosi and to President Biden and do the right thing. He's one of the only Democrats who has actually said this is wrong. It's impacting our communities, and it's actually bringing more traffic, more trafficking, whether it's human trafficking or drug trafficking, in our communities and overwhelming our hospitals and our schools, Pfluger said. He urged people with family and friends in other parts of the state to call them and tell them to contact their representative about the border. It makes a huge difference, Pfluger said. On a separate topic, Pfluger said the oil and gas industry is under assault. At the end of 2019, the United States of America, because of the shale revolution that developed right here in the Permian Basin, that everybody in this room was a part of, we became energy independent, energy dominant. We exported more than we imported. We got to a point where we're almost 14 million barrels a day. We are blessed with abundant natural resources in this country, and in providing those resources for every single American to use, not only did we cut the cost of living for energy cost by $10,000 per family of four over 10 years, but we also sent energy to places like sub-Saharan Africa, India, Southeast Asia, and we raised 1 billion people out of poverty. Not only did we raise 1 million people out of poverty, but we lowered emissions through private innovation, not through government mandates. Through private innovation, we lowered emissions to record levels. The Paris Accords don't come close to what we've done in this country, Pfluger said. The administration on day one, what did they do? They issued executive order after executive order aimed at killing this industry. And just 2 days ago, the President of the United States said, I think we need help from OPEC to provide us more oil and gas. Guys, now this is unacceptable. 25 years ago, when I wanted in the Air Force Academy, you know what we studied as part of an instrument of power, energy independence. That was 5 years after the Gulf War. So 5 years after the Gulf War, the service academies, West Point, the Air Force Academy, the Naval Academy, they were teaching energy independence. If only we could be energy independent. Imagine if we could be energy independent. Imagine if what we could produce more and export. That's what we were studying 25 years ago. Well, guess what? We're there. Y'all have done that. Everyone in this room has been a part of it, and I'm not okay handing our power, literally handing our power to people like Putin in Russia. I'm not okay with that. To giving China, who's building 366-plus new coal plants, our power. I'm not okay handing malign actors around the world our power, he said. He added that this area is the most prolific source of oil and gas in the entire world. Being able to ship those resources to allies and partners makes it stronger and our allies stronger. Energy security means national security, he added. On infrastructure and budget reconciliation, Pfluger said 9 Democrats have told Pelosi they are not voting on the $3.5 trillion package until the $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill is brought to the House floor for a hearing. Pfluger said he is not voting for either one. He said the $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation is a Green New Deal and it would explode the debt. It is Bernie Sanders' dream to have a Green New Deal in this country, to have socialism start to take root in this country, Pfluger said. He added that electrification of cars, for example, would occur through government mandate, not private industry. It says that we're going to have socialist-type programs in health care. We're going to expand Obamacare. We're going to expand not only tax credits, but the payments that are going for child care. None of us in this room, I would venture to say, want bad health care. None of us want our children to be treated poorly. But folks, I'm for competition, Pfluger said. When I look at the Permian Basin and the innovation that's coming out of here, it's the competition that has gotten us to record levels of low emissions. It's competition that allows us to produce oil and gas cheaper and cheaper and deliver it to Americans so that they have the benefits of affordable, reliable energy. Pfluger said competition, transparency, and choices are what's needed in healthcare. He added that infrastructure, including broadband, is needed in the Permian Basin, and he is proud of Representative Tom Craddock, Republican Midland, and Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, who are fighting for infrastructure in Austin, despite the Democrats fleeing for Washington. On a separate item, Pfluger said there are 2 Americans being held in Russia by Putin that need to be freed. One is Trevor Reed, an ex-Marine, and the other is Paul Whelan. According to the NBC News website, Reed was detained last year on charges of assaulting a police officer after a night of drinking. He was sentenced to 9 years in a Russian prison. Whelan was sentenced to 16 years in prison on suspicion of spying, the BBC News website said. We are working to put as much pressure on Putin as we can. We have gotten President Biden to talk to him directly about these 2 people, so that's a huge victory in and of itself. But we're not going to stop until we bring Trevor Reed home. I wanted to tell you that because he is a constituent. His parents live in Granbury. They're sick about this, Pfluger said. So I want you to know that we're not going to stop fighting. I'm very proud to have brought a Democrat on board and to fight in a bipartisan way, person for justice, Pfluger said. He added that people need to register voters, get involved, and run for office. And even though some thought the 2020 election was stolen, he said they should still vote. Odessa Mayor Javier Hovan was in attendance and was pleased to get an update on what's going on in Washington directly from the congressman. "It's very important that everyone in this room be able to attend these," Hovan said. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. James Jimmy Dean Staines joined his mom with the Lord on Tuesday, August 3rd, in Universal City, Texas, at the age of 46. He was born at Hahn Air Force Base, Germany, on June 3, 1975, to Rick and the late Lillian Maud Staines. Jimmy was preceded in death by his grandparents, Ivory and Lula Mae Westcott, John and Esther Staines, his mother Lillian Maud Staines, and nephews Caleb James Aguero and Joshua Aguero. Survivors are his father Rick Staines and fiancée Bonnie Biddle of Cibolo, Texas, sister Sherry and husband Oscar Aguero, and children Christopher, John, and Lily of Marfa, Texas, brother Wally and Christy Staines of Universal City, a nephew and Bonnie's children, many cousins, family, and friends. Visitation begins at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, August 18th, with family and friends from 6 to 7 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Graveside services will follow at 2 p.m. at Gaines County Memorial Cemetery in Seminole. Online condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Billy Nell West passed away on August 12th at the age of 86 at Covenant Hospital in Lubbock. She was born on November 23, 1934 in Paint Rock to her parents Oma Riley Bullard and William H. West. Her mother married Alvin L. Bullard when Billy was 12 years old, who loved her like his own child until the day he died. Billy leaves behind her daughter, Lorna Womack Farr, and husband Jerry of Lubbock. She has two grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, her sister Jody West, and brother Monty Bullard. Billy will be laid to rest in Millersview Cemetery, Millersview, Texas, at 1 p.m. on Saturday, August 21st. Nancy Pollard Tarvin of Nacogdoches, Texas, passed away on August 11th. There was a time of visitation on Sunday, August 15th, at Ramsey Funeral Home in Georgetown, Texas. The funeral mass will be held on Monday, August 16th at 9:30 a.m. at the Santa Rosa de Lima Catholic Church in Andes. Mrs. Tarvin will be laid to rest next to her beloved husband, Dr. Charles Tarvin, at 11 a.m. at the Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Killeen. Nancy was the daughter of Dabney Mari and Margaret Brock Pollard, born on August 14, 1937, in San Antonio. Dr. Charles Tarvin, Nancy's beloved husband, preceded her in death along with her parents. Survivors include her sons, Mari Tarvin and wife Leslie of Nacogdoches, and Brian Tarvin, also of Nacogdoches, daughter Tracy and her husband Wade Buford of Lubbock, seven grandchildren, four great-grandchildren. Memorials in Nancy's name are appreciated and may be made to Catholic Charities or Wounded Warriors Project. You may leave a message or memory in the online guest book at www.ramseyfuneral.com. Jerry Lee Fox, Jr., 74, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 4th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 17th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. William Franklin Sonny Gerard, Jr., 68, of Midland, died Friday, August 13th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. James Lawrence Ownsby, 61, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 11th in El Paso. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, August 20th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at the Odessa 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Alicia Holly Stevens, 21, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 11th in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Edwin Dale Stringer, 79, of Odessa, died Friday, July 2nd in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. September 2nd at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Lubbock. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Johnny Lee Vasquez, Jr., 27, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 12th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, August 21st, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at the Odessa 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Decision-Making Without Politics. Good Samaritan from the Odessa American. Karen Edmondson, MS, LPC, NCC, writes, "The Centers for Disease Control has recommended governmental mandates to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The public use of vaccines against the virus has become a controversial issue that has created a powerful division in opinion. Individuals have the right to refuse the vaccine. Others who are vaccinated argue that this will put them at risk. What we choose to do or not do is a personal choice. In February 2019, I had written an article on William Gasser's 3 R's of decision-making. The 3 questions include, is it right, responsible, and realistic? 1. Is it right for you? The only person who knows what is right for you is you. 2. Is it responsible? Which choice will cause the least amount of harm to everyone involved, including yourself? 3. Is it realistic? Is it doable? If you say yes to all 3, it is a good decision. If it is not right or irresponsible, don't do it. Bad decision. If it is right and responsible but not doable, do problem solving to make it doable. When answering the question if it is right for you, you need to filter the choices through your value system, not someone else's values. To be responsible, you want to do the least harm. This is a weighing process of evaluating the cost if you say yes and do it, and the cost of saying no and don't do it. Most choices will involve some harm, the goal to minimize it. Finally, is it realistic or do you have the resources to do it? Some may choose to not have the vaccine due to their faith, fears, or personal values. Others couldn't imagine why anyone would refuse the vaccine. The decision-making model based on your personal values and current beliefs. If your situation changes, you can make a different choice." Other voices. The Idle American. Your Weight and Fate. Don Newberry writes, "Perhaps the most current evidence that August falls into the dog days category appeared in the neighborhood news the other day. Most of us slog through these stifling days, and media folks scrounge around for news stories when little seems to be happening. For example, a woman in our neighborhood appealed for household scales that she might borrow or buy. Many folks responded, proving yet again that neighbors generally like to help when needs are identified. In a nutshell, she explained that her scales, purchased for around $60 a few years ago, weigh items and people differently when used in different rooms. Such a mystery invites head scratching, doesn't it? Many suggestions poured in, including the obvious, like insertion of fresh batteries and careful placement of scales on level floors. She tried everything to no avail. She believes that her scales have many years of life left If only she could figure out why placement in different rooms produces different readings. Perhaps this is an August thing, when one is running out of ideas about what to do when there's nothing to do. Placing two scales side by side could make the puzzlement even worse, but she wants to try. Thankfully, a reader said she has an extra scale and will drop it off. All considered, though, until we feel the fall crispness of an autumn night, gently cooling oppressive heat, we'll continue to challenge that summertime song about living being easy. The subject of scales jogs my memory. In my childhood, tall scales stood in most stores offering our weight and fate for a penny. When we had one, we'd hop on the scales, already aware of our weight, but curious about the fate part. One could hardly expect to seek a fortune teller for 1/100th of a dollar. Never mind that the cards harmlessly prophesied sparkling personalities, good jobs, and much happiness. A friend remembers a guy waiting to board a bus to Albuquerque. He had time to spare and decided to hop on a weight and fate scale. Out came a card that he weighed 180 pounds, had blue eyes, and held a ticket for a bus ride to Albuquerque. The man was astounded that the machine knew so much. He still had time and several more pennies, so he inserted two more coins with identical results. In a stupor, exceeded only by his curiosity, he decided to spend one more penny to see if his fate varied at all. After all, he was thoroughly entertained at a cost of only 4 cents. The final card read, "You weigh 180 pounds, have blue eyes, and a bus ticket to Albuquerque." However, the bus left the station 1 minute ago. My Uncle Mort recalls an August conundrum several years ago when his stubborn old truck wouldn't start when he bought vanilla ice cream, but kicked right off if he chose chocolate. He shared his concern with a mechanic. He asked Mort to take him along on a couple of ice cream trips. Sure enough, the truck wouldn't start if they had vanilla, but kicked right off if he chose chocolate. The mechanic was stymied. Eureka, the vanilla purchase, noted, soft serve was quick, so the engine was still hot. The chocolate, however, was frozen hard, thus requiring a few more minutes, during which the engine cooled. Mort didn't say how much the mechanic charged, but it may have been the price of a couple of ice cream cones. As I've so often claimed, Mort's wheeling is exceeded only by his dealing. The weight and fate story reminded him of a long-ago aunt who was such a heavyweight, a recorded message said, "One of you will have to get off the scale." Doctors tired of recommending weight loss measures. As both her years and pounds increased, they suggested that she should simply practice being jolly. Oh, well. M. Ray Perryman, The Economist. Roadwork Ahead. The U.S. Senate recently passed a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill in a rare and much-needed bipartisan action to inject funds to fix and expand roads, bridges, water systems, the power grid, and other pressing priorities. It will doubtlessly go through some delays, detours, and drama in the House, but seems destined to ultimately make its way to the president's desk and a waiting pen, hopefully sooner rather than later. After a laughable number of infrastructure weeks in Washington, D.C., for many years we are finally on the cusp of an infrastructure decade. The bill, once implemented, will fund a wide variety of infrastructure projects. Aging, congested, and unsafe highways and bridges can be upgraded and expanded after an extended period of deferred maintenance, improving efficiency and safety. Rail and transit facilities will be enhanced. Water systems will be modernized and expanded to meet growing needs. The electric grid will become more robust. Key assets will be better protected from cyber attacks. The bill also provides billions to fight climate change. Broadband expansion is also on the list, together with resources for access by low-income families. More readily available broadband would not only protect communities and families in the event of future shutdowns such as we saw with COVID-19, but also allow for a continuation of remote work as hybrid office situations emerge. While both sides can point to changes they might prefer and other measures addressing human infrastructure are likely to follow, the significance of this measure should not be ignored. Moving people, goods, power, water, and data around the country brings enormous gains in efficiency and, thus, economic potential. We've studied the benefits associated with all types of infrastructure on many occasions. Well-conceived projects typically generate a 25% to 35% annual rate of return to overall activity over and above the short-term gains from the construction itself, which alone yields about $3.90 in total spending per dollar of direct outlays. One of our more interesting findings is that the U.S. economy would be 20 to 25% smaller today in the absence of the development of the interstate highway system beginning in the 1950s. This bill certainly does not resolve all of the issues confronting the U.S. today. It doesn't contain the Delta variant, it doesn't fix the immediate supply chain issues, and it doesn't address the educational gaps of family hardships that were already massive and recently made decidedly worse by the pandemic. It does, however, accomplish a great deal to secure our ability to grow in the future and achieve greater economic heights, not to mention the breath of fresh air from seeing the parties cooperate on something of consequence. Road work ahead is a very good sign indeed. Stay safe. Back to the Mideast dependency. The world turned upside down. The Poseidon Adventure, 1972. Dennis Elam writes, "The bear market of the 1970s brought a new genre of film, the disaster flick. Apparently, forecasting the long 1968 to 1982 bear market, the movie followed a handful of individuals trying to escape an ocean liner turned upside down by a rogue wave. Later titles involved a skyscraper fire as well as earthquakes. Befitting reality TV, we now have a series of real-world disasters. Open Borders features 212,000 illegal immigrants crossing into the U.S. the last month. Where is Dirty Harry when we need him? Recorded over 8 shootings in Chicago last week. Afghanistan is likely to fall completely to the Taliban by year end. But our topic today is back to the Mideast as, yes, Team Biden begs OPEC for more oil. The U.S. finally achieved what Jimmy Carter wanted in 1979, energy independence, courtesy of fracking. It has been so successful, the U.S. is now an exporter of natural gas. Determined to do the opposite of Trump no matter what, here is the Biden 2021 record to date. Kill the Keystone XL pipeline. Cancel oil leasing in Alaska. Suspend oil leases on federal land. Increase mileage standard to 58 miles per gallon, requiring electric cars near no one is buying. Endangered Species Act slows drilling in western states. The collective result is nationwide $3 a gallon gasoline price with prices approaching $6 in the San Francisco area. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan put it this way, "At a critical moment in global recovery, the OPEC production expansion is not enough. So we cannot depend on ourselves for crude oil. We need to return to the most unstable region in the world. And recall Iran, another oil producer, is behind the Taliban in Afghanistan, causing lots of nervous reaction in the Arab Gulf states. The move to 50% electric car production by 2030 is based on hope rather than proven batteries, not to mention the lack of an expanded grid to support charging. And now we have about $4 to $5 trillion in new spending without the revenue stream to support it. What could go wrong? Extracting multiple thousand billions from the real economy to government investment will only decrease productivity and inflation. That will be the real cost of AOC Sanders' program. Oil prices may hit the mid-50s by September. Natural gas prices look stronger into first quarter of 2022. BBB scam alert. Watch out for fraudulent QR codes. Start with trust, Dustin Fawcett writes. In an effort to minimize physical contact at businesses across the nation in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, many companies have turned to QR codes to guide customers to their apps, menus, events, or package tracking services. However, BBB Scam Tracker is receiving reports of con artists who are using QR codes as a disguise to direct victims to malicious websites, prompting the user to input personal information or login credentials for the scammers to steal. How the scam works. You encounter a QR code through an email, direct message on social media, text message, flyer, or other marketing material that appears legitimate. After scanning the code with your phone's camera, it may direct you to a phishing website and request the user to provide basic information to access content. Other times, con artists use QR code to automatically launch payment apps or follow a malicious social media account. In many cases, scammers who are sending fraudulent letters or emails include the official QR code of the organization or entity they are claiming to represent to appear more credible. One victim reported this tactic to BBB Scam Tracker when they received a fraudulent letter regarding student loan consolidation. QR codes are also a common element in cryptocurrency scams, where Bitcoin addresses are often sent via QR codes. One consumer who was contacted by a binary and Forex trader through Instagram about an investment opportunity said, "After I had paid the withdrawal fee through the Bitcoin machine and sent it to the QR code I was provided, I received another email saying I needed to pay a cost of transfer fee. This is when I figured out that something wasn't right." How to avoid QR scams. Confirm QR code before scanning. If you receive a QR code from a friend via text or a message on social media from a workmate, be sure to confirm with that person they meant to send you the code to verify they have not been hacked. Do not open links from strangers. If you receive an unsolicited message from a stranger that includes a QR code, BBB strongly recommends against scanning it. If the message, along with the code, promises exciting gifts or investment opportunities, exercise extreme caution if you decide to interact with it. Verify the source. If a QR code appears to come from a reputable source, it is wise to double-check with the business or entity to verify its authenticity. Call or visit their official website to confirm it is legitimate and that the source of the communication is a part of the organization. Be wary of short links. If a shortened URL appears when scanning a QR code, there is no way of knowing where the code will direct you once the link is followed. It may be a guise for a malicious website. Check for tampering. Some scammers attempt to mislead consumers by altering legitimate business ads or by placing sticks on the QR code. Keep an eye out for signs of tampering and, if discovered, inform the business or entity to ensure the posted QR code is genuine. Install a QR scanner with added security. Some antivirus companies have QR scanner apps that check the safety of a scanned link before it is opened. These apps can assist in identifying phishing websites, forced app downloads, and other dangerous links. To learn more about protecting your information online, read the BBB's tips on data privacy and cybersecurity. If you've been the victim of a QR scam, report it at bbb.org/scam-tracker. Your report may prevent another person from falling victim. COVID-19 Vaccine Shot Clinic. The Ector County Health Department has scheduled a COVID-19 vaccine shot clinic for ages 18 and older from 8:30 a.m. to noon Friday at the Southside Senior Center, 900 South Dixie Boulevard. Walk-ins are welcome. First come, first serve. For more information, call 337-4531. Health Sciences Building Plans Moving Forward by Ruth Campbell. As the groundbreaking on Odessa College's Wood Health Sciences Building draws closer, JSA Architects President Cruz Castillo said the new structure is progressing. The firm is currently in the schematic design phase of the Health Sciences Building, Castillo said in an August 11th interview. About 8 associates and architects are involved in the project. Being able to be a part of the Odessa College family is a great feeling. Having attended Odessa College prior to transferring to architecture school, I think back how to how the campus felt and looked back then, and how I have been blessed to help the continual transformation of the campus today, he said. Walking in the Salisbury or Wood buildings, you can get an eyeful of first-class facilities that we are using as a new standard for the new buildings to come. I feel proud and I understand the great responsibility it takes to help keep the Odessa College campus looking forward and sustainable for the long-term benefit of our community, he added. The schematic design phase will determine what the interior looks like, how it will be laid out, and what the exterior is going to look like, Castillo said. The 83,000-square-foot, four-story structure will cost about $40 million. It is part of OC's Vision 2030 Plus project. At an announcement marking the milestone of meeting the fundraising goal for the building, Vice President of Advancement Jackie Gore said the campaign will continue with Phase 2, which will go toward equipment, technology, and other costs related to the building. Castillo said they also want to make sure all the equipment for the simulation hospital to function correctly also is in place. The building will be equipped with state-of-the-art technology to simulate patient care scenarios. The first floor will include Medical Center Simulation Hospital. The simulation hospital will provide a collaborative environment for all health sciences students that will include the following suites: emergency room, operating room, labor and delivery, nursery, physical therapy, and radiological technology. The simulation hospital will also include 5 high simulation patient rooms, 5 doctor's office simulation rooms, and 10 basic simulation patient rooms. The second story is more of a public floor that has a large lecture hall and some other support spaces, Castillo said. The third and fourth floors include classrooms, computer labs, faculty offices, and related support spaces. Castillo said the construction documents should be completed by the end of the year, and the project will go out for bid in January or February. At the end of February, we are hoping to be able to give a recommendation to the college for a general contractor to then build a building, so construction would commence sometime in March, and then it would go for 24 months, Castillo said. It will be the tallest building on campus. The Rudy Acosta Student Pavilion will be modernized and relocated to a new location on the Odessa College campus as a part of Vision 2030 Plus. The building will be constructed on the site that was occupied by the pavilion and Travis Hall. Once it is built at its new location, the Rudy Acosta Student Pavilion will resume its function as an outdoor space for celebrations, dances, meetings, concerts, as well as providing a daily social gathering location for early college high school students and OC students. Students from the 2 early college high schools on campus, OC Techs and Odessa Collegiate Academy, will be eating in a huge portable building until other accommodations are made. Groundbreaking for the Health Sciences Center will be 10 a.m. September 1st and tie in with a number of festivities to kick off the year-long celebration of Odessa College's 75th anniversary. The celebration starts at 9 a.m. and will include a pep rally with the OC Blues dance team and OC Drumline and a hospitality and VIP room at the Salisbury Campus Center. A concert featuring the Little River Band will be at 7 p.m. at the Ector Theater. Other plans for Vision 2030 Plus also are in the works to create a loop around the campus. Vice President for Administrative Services Ken Zartner said they are going to start with a smaller loop that goes around that goes behind the Salisbury Campus Center, makes a left-hand turn to the Wood Building, and it comes on the backside of the Wood Health Sciences Building and cuts up on the Spur Building and comes back around in this smaller square of a loop. I think it's one-third of a mile, and that eventually then it will go around the new Wood Health Sciences Building as well. But we didn't put it around that right now because all those zones are going to be blocked off for construction. It's a smaller version of what it will eventually be, Zartner said. He added that there will eventually be several loops around the campus for people to use for exercise, not only walking but stations. OC President Gregory Williams believes in the 30 for 30 fitness challenge, which will be kicking off. We're hoping to have a campus loop completed by then so that we can help celebrate part of the movement that we want to create in 30 for 30. The problem is that even though we ordered the equipment back in April, it's still not here, so there are challenges with COVID. There are computers that I ordered 9 months ago, and they're still not here. It's just that we're dealing with, but we're remaining optimistic that we can have that stuff installed by then, Zartner said. One of the coolest things, if you ever drive by OC or drive by university around 6:30 to 7 o'clock at night, there's 100-plus people utilizing the track and walking and getting out there and moving. They never leave the track. We would love for them to walk around our campus and see how beautiful it is, Zartner said. They might even walk in and register, he said. New lighting also is coming to the OC Sports Center. If we want to be the best community college in the country, I feel that we need to look that way, so it's as simple as making sure all our light bulbs are on and our ceiling tiles are there, Zartner said. Something people may have noticed over the past 10 years is that when they look up and see all the championship banners, they also notice missing lights and ceiling tiles. The reason is because the way that building was built, you just can't change that. You literally have to build scaffolding, which is huge, Zartner said. But he added it's important for the college to look and feel its best. We want people to be proud when they go into the sports center, Zartner said. We want them to be proud of the community college that they have. It's all about the little things. You've got to do every little thing right in order to be the best. Will ERCOT fail again? Senator says consortium still doesn't have the power it needs to avoid blackouts, by Bob Campbell. Winter Storm Uri had the right name because it was like something out of a Russian novel. The question is, could the brutal Siberia-like conditions of February 13th through the 17th return next winter, or could a big blackout scuttle the air conditioning this summer? It's not just a matter of inconvenience, because Uri killed 700 Texans, prompting state lawmakers to pass two bills that they say make a recurrence much less likely. But State Senator Cal Seliger, Republican Amarillo, says ERCOT, Electric Reliability Council of Texas, is not out of the woods because the state needs 80,000 megawatts of generating capacity but only has 70,000. Noting state officials booted several out-of-state ERCOT directors off its board, Seliger said. They had one from Germany. People didn't understand what ERCOT does, he says. They don't generate electricity, they just put it on the grid and send it to various places. The problem was that the demand was so large and so varied. What ERCOT did wrong was to overcharge people. The entire board of the Texas Public Utility Commission quit, which they should have. Seliger said the Austin legislature deregulated the state's power network in the mid-1990s, but now might consider re-regulating it and tying into out-of-state sources like the Northern Panhandle's connection to the Southwest Power Pool, which extends into Minnesota and cut the Northern Panhandle's rolling blackout to 2 hours. People might pay a little more if we re-regulate it, but they would be happier with that than they were with what happened in February, he said. In any case, we can't have this happen again. We have to get it done. Texas' 92 utility companies are supplied by the nuclear power stations in Matagorda and Somerville counties, 14 coal and lignite plants, 50 natural gas-powered plants, 5 biomass plants, 12 hydroelectric dams, 77 wind farms, and 31 solar farms. Seliger noted that Berkshire Hathaway, the investment company led by multi-billionaire Warren Buffett of Omaha, has offered to spend $8.3 billion to build 10 natural gas-fired plants, charging Texas residential customers a small monthly fee and operating only when extra power is needed. He said the proposal is being evaluated by state leaders. Asked if ERCOT narrowly averted another statewide blackout early this summer, he said, "They told us they were afraid there might be one." Handling 90% of the state's electric load, ERCOT is a consortium of consumers, cooperatives, generators, power marketers, retail electric providers, investor-owned electric utilities, transmission and distribution providers, and municipally owned electric utilities. Ector County Democratic Chairman Hannah Horick said the legislation Governor Greg Abbott signed June 9th resulted more in massive donations to his 2022 re-election campaign than it did in needed reforms. Effective next year, the two Texas Senate bills that Abbott signed require power generators to be weatherized and for generators and transmission lines to be upgraded to make them better able to withstand severe conditions, with mandatory inspections and fines of up to $1 million for non-compliance, among other measures. An emergency alert system will be installed to alert citizens of impending bad weather and power outages. "We had hoped for something substantial, but that wasn't the case," Horick said. The governor accepted big donations from energy executives after the passage of the bills, and if they're happy, that's not a great sign for the consumers because these are the folks who led the infrastructure that created the system. There were plenty of measures from both sides of the aisle that didn't make it through this past session, so it doesn't seem to me like bipartisan results. We need to connect to power sources from other parts of the country, and we need people and organizations like ERCOT to protect the state and not the folks who appointed them. The Texas Tribune reported August 4th that Abbott got $4.6 million from the energy industry just after the regular legislative session ended May 31st. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, said Senate Bills 2 and 3 took important and necessary steps to prevent another frozen Texas energy grid. "No more grid failures are expected in 2021 because supply is projected to sufficiently outpace demand as more generators return online after being down for maintenance," Landgraf said. "We must continue to look ahead toward what the grid is and what its related infrastructure will look like 5 years from now and 50 years from now." The legislature is taking a deep dive between now and the 2023 session to see what else can be done to ensure that the Texas grid remains reliable and affordable in the long-term future. The bills were sponsored by Senator Kelly Hancock, Republican North Ranchland Hills, and Senator Charles Schwertner, Republican, Georgetown. Republican Congressman August Pfluger of San Angelo told the Odessa American from Washington that Abbott and state legislators moved swiftly to pass initiatives this session that address the issues from the winter storm and improved grid reliability during catastrophic events. I'm eager to see how these changes get implemented, and I stand ready to ensure that Texas has the resources it needs to avoid a repeat of February, Pfluger said. An ERCOT spokesman in Austin said the group continues to operate the grid aggressively to ensure there is enough generation to serve Texans. We're doing this by bringing more generation online sooner if needed, and by purchasing more reserve power, the spokesman said. The PUC said ERCOT and it are taking steps to improve grid reliability in the hottest days of summer. As summer heats up and we work to make the most out of existing resources, we've directed ERCOT to take aggressive action to increase the amount of reserve power available, new PUC Chairman Peter Lake said. While our policy efforts are sharply focused on the long-term goals set by Governor Abbott and the Texas legislature, these operational changes will increase the grid's margin of safety in the near term. Lake said the PUC had told ERCOT to increase significantly its amount of power on standby for the afternoon hours when summer demand is at its highest, and that ERCOT was doing so by buying more reserve power from generators whose plants could respond relatively quickly. BBB tip: 5 ways local businesses can make a positive community impact. Local businesses provide a host of benefits for communities across the nation, contributing to a diverse and dynamic marketplace that strengthens and reinforces ethical business practices. In addition to the charm and personality local businesses add to a community, they also provide practical benefits such as economic and charitable contributions. As they grow and succeed, local businesses bolster the surrounding area and can make a positive impact on their community in 5 main ways. Give back to the community. A common way that a local business can make a positive community impact is through community involvement. Community involvement can take a variety of forms, including charity drives. By organizing and hosting a charity drive, local businesses are able to promote causes that are important to them or the community they serve. BBB recommends using a Wise Giving Alliance accredited nonprofit organization, which must pass the BBB standards for charity accountability, and for local businesses to research a chosen charity on give.org to verify their legitimacy. Partnering with local organizations. By partnering with local organizations, local businesses can give back to their communities through donations, sponsorships, volunteering, or promotion. It is also a fantastic way to meet local officials and community leaders, strengthening the relationship between the business and the community they serve. Volunteering at community events. Interacting and volunteering at local events, such as holiday events or park cleanup initiatives, is a great way to demonstrate a local business values and dedication to their community. It is also a fantastic networking opportunity for a local business to understand the needs of their community and how best they could serve those needs. Create a unique community identity. A street block of local businesses has a much greater cultural value than one with large chain stores. Each small business brings a measure of unique character to the community, and long-established local businesses eventually become a part of the community identity, history, and culture. Local businesses are most often owned by members of the community themselves and form meaningful relationships with their customers. Communities take pride in their unique culture and identity and often appreciate local businesses that they feel personally invested in as customers and employees. Contribute to a community's economic health. As a business becomes more successful and profitable, this success is recycled back into the local economy. Due to the fact that a local business must pay local taxes, a portion of their revenue goes directly back into the community. Additionally, many local businesses source services and goods that they require from other businesses in the area rather than from large corporations, strengthening the overall business community. When local businesses are more successful, they create new job opportunities for the local population. These workers will often spend the money they earn through the job in the local market, promoting business growth and contributing to local economic development. Inspire, innovate, and compete. As a local business grows and succeeds, other community members might be inspired to start a business of their own. When those new businesses grow, they generate competition and the need for innovation, resulting in a diverse set of local businesses that are all striving to meet the needs of the community in unique ways. Small businesses can also provide hiring and training opportunities to the community, teaching people the necessary skills to eventually run their own local business. Promote environmental friendliness. Local businesses tend to have a lighter environmental and infrastructural impact than large chain businesses. Small businesses can usually take advantage of original or remodeled historical buildings and can often be operated from home, minimizing the environmental impact of office buildings and travel. Local retailers and manufacturers can also produce, access, and distribute goods in more sustainable ways. Manufacturers can access materials locally. Restaurants can source their food and supplies from community farms, and businesses can distribute goods locally, lowering emissions from transportation and freight. For more business tips and to view the latest business news from BBB, visit bbb.org/small business. To learn how you can help support local businesses, visit bbb.org. The Economist, This Stuff Matters, by M. Ray Perryman. CNBC regularly ranks the top states for business, and the winner was not Texas. The Lone Star State came in fourth after Virginia, North Carolina, and Utah, all of which compete aggressively and effectively for desirable corporate locations. While fourth is not terrible, it is worse than we normally fare in such listings. More importantly, the details were eerily disturbing. CNBC evaluates 85 areas within 10 broad categories. Texas topped the rankings in the workforce area, which is based on items such as educational attainment, net attraction of college-educated workers, concentrations in key skills, productivity, availability, and diversity. This segment is obviously important in that quality companies can't consider locating in areas where labor resources are insufficient or inadequate. The state also compared well in access to capital, 3, economy, 5, and cost of doing business, 10. Unfortunately, two rankings stood out in a particularly jarring manner. One is education, where Texas came in at 33. The category encompasses the number of higher education institutions and historically black colleges and universities, as well as measures of K-12 outcomes. It also includes long-term trends in state support for higher education and spending for public schools. This area of weakness has long been recognized, but is becoming more acute in light of enhanced employer demands and massive demographic shifts. It is naive to think that Texas can perpetually rank this low in education and maintain the top spot in workforce. Over time, insufficient commitment to educational excellence erodes living standards and workforce quality. The worst performance was in life, health, and inclusion, reflecting the effects of the pandemic and social trends and concerns. Texas was ranked an abysmal 49th. The related article specifically called out policies that run counter to inclusiveness, such as current and proposed restrictions on voting and LGBTQ rights. The state's underfunded public health system, nation's highest rate of uninsured, exacerbated by the refusal to adopt Medicaid expansion, and low COVID-19 vaccination rate were also cited. We have studied all of these issues in detail and found that the economic stakes are in the hundreds of billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of jobs, not to mention the sheer human dignity. Many of these reports are available at perrimangroup.com. The bottom line is that knowledge workers and hence high-growth companies are much less likely to locate in places which are not seen as inclusive, and this tendency is increasing over time. This ranking is a compelling early warning signal that short-sighted, counterproductive policies risk eroding the progress over the past 30-plus years in building Texas to be the most competitive economy in the country. It's an unforced error that the state can ill afford.
Reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.